This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
We focus on an academic paper, and this one is one of those where I'd call on you and encourage you to call a friend who is in business or somebody who wants to get into business. The focus will be around funding and how to fund a SMME or a small business. And this is the work that has been done by Bonginkosi Zwane, who's going to be joining us on the line, a lecturer as well as a scholar. So his focus was around the use of financial bootstrapping by small businesses at eThekwini. So your experience, I'd like to know from you as somebody who is in business or somebody who has been in business as well. How did you fund your business? Where did you get the money from? How did you make sure that you are sustainable? And who are the people who were willing to give you the money? And did you go the option of the bootstrapping instead of going to financiers instead of going to the banks at all? I'd love to hear from you on 0861-987-000. You can also tweet at Aldrin Simpier, hashtag Power Talk, and also tweet at Power FM 97. And probably while we're at it, also the conversation around how difficult it is to get funding for SMMEs, get funding to start your own business. There are some interesting findings that Bonginkosi has made. And for me as well, is that this dissertation, for instance, is from 2011, right? We are now in 2020. And the things that Bonginkosi mentions in his dissertation are issues that SMMEs are currently still struggling with. Entrepreneurs are still struggling with that. Bonginkosi, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, my brother. And good morning to your listeners. Thank you for having me on your show.
Tell me quickly, just listening into what I just mentioned now about this particular research having been done in 2010 towards 2011, you're done by 2011, and then looking at where we are now as a country, like nearly 10 years later, the issues that you highlight in your dissertation are still prevalent.
Yes, they are still prevalent, and they are about to get worse because we have never imagined that we'll have COVID-19.
Mm.
And the greatest casualty of this pandemic will be all of humanity, but in the main small businesses. So coupled with the issues raised in 2011, there is a study I'm currently conducting as we speak today for my doctoral work. It still involves the funding. So the issues that were prevalent in 2011, the study was mainly done in 2010 and 11.
Mm-hmm.
They are still prevalent today. And also the focus of this study, although it's SMMEs, the focus was mainly micro enterprises, the very small businesses, the one that you'll find in the location and in the township, and mostly rural areas. So they are still faced with those challenges of finding funding, and it's about to get worse now.
At the time, what was it about the nature of business and funding these micro businesses that got you intrigued and you said, let's look into this?
In the main, it was incidental that the study looked at businesses. In the main, the study was looking at the challenges that were faced by South Africa. And in the main, we're looking at young black graduates. So the issue that we were confronted with at the time was a huge unemployment in South Africa, poverty and inequality. And then as a special focus was on African graduates. As they were graduating, they were finding it difficult to find employment. And as a result, the realistic alternative that they had was entrepreneurship. So they had to start their own businesses so that they are able to employ themselves. In many specialized fields such as accounting, taxation, and auditing, perhaps engineering as well.
Mm-hmm.
So the graduates had to create their own employment instead of looking at the businesses. So this is how we landed on researching businesses. The idea was to research how do people find economic participation. So one of the key areas we found when we're looking at businesses and the establishment thereof was that businesses had a challenge of finding seed capital, the capital that is needed to start a business and or to sustain it in the infant stages. So this is how we get to do this study in the main.
Okay, so before we go into some of the findings that you've made and as well as some of your literature review, what I'd like to do for our listeners as well, and I'd like you to do for our listeners as well, is just quickly paint us a picture of at the time that you were doing this particular research. What we should also take into consideration is that the country had just come out of that economic recession of 2008-2009. So it was having an impact. And if you remember that the millions of people who lost their jobs during that particular period, as well as the number of businesses that were closing down, can you just take us back to those moments?
Yes, for sure. But Adrian, I must make you aware that I'm not an economist. Eh?
No, I totally understand. Just to paint a picture of this is what the picture was like. Because what's important about what you mentioned earlier on is that while these issues still remain prevalent, you highlighted that they are going to become even more prevalent now that we are going through COVID-19.
The problem at the time, I could not be sure of the numbers in terms of the expanded definition of unemployment. Mm. At the time, we were sitting at about 30% of unemployment. That is immediately before the recession of 2008.
Yeah.
Already as a country, we're sitting at around 30%. So what happened in 2008 just compounded our problems in South Africa. So a whole lot more South Africans were losing their employment. In hundreds of thousands. Mm. So the situation became even more bleak. So unemployment, inequality was worsened in the country. But again, when you look at the information and you analyze it correctly, we needed to check in this 30% going to 32, 33, who was mostly affected? The mostly affected was young people, more than any other person. Was young people. And also when you look at young people, who in particular, those would be your African, both those who have a high education and those who did not have high education. So the recession in 2008 made a situation that was bad worse for employment statistics in South Africa. And because graduates and young people did not have the requisite skills, those were the first people to be losing their jobs, because often than not in industry, it's a question of those who came last. There will be those who leave the employment when companies are folding or the situation becomes worse.
And
those would be young people. Hence, even now, we've got a problem of high employment amongst younger persons. So to respond to those things, we needed to do things differently. And as you would know, generally in South Africa, most our education is geared towards employment, that people should seek employment rather than employment creation. So the study was aimed, therefore, to conscientize younger persons that instead of looking for jobs, we rather try to create jobs for ourselves primarily and those other people that we can help with employment, and hence the importance of small businesses.
Yeah. And then you then start doing your research as well as your literature review and look at the issue around seed funding and how important it is. However, though, it is not widely available, if at all.
Yeah. The study evolved. And you will see also part of the limitations that I raised, that I was limited with time. And interestingly, this is not what I was studying initially. Initially, I was looking at the funding of businesses, that the major hindrance for people to start and remain in business was funding. So when I look at the literature, I never knew what was seed funding and seed capital. I didn't know what was bootstrapping. So in the main, I was looking at the traditional sources of funding. And all the literature that I could find, at least at the time, given the limitations of time, was that they could not fund businesses that were starting. The only reference that they made was government agencies. It was only after a discussion with one of the scholars in my university who comes from Greece that he suggested that you need to look at non-traditional sources of funding for small businesses. That's what the countries in Malaysia and in East Asian countries would have done. So this is how we come across the question of bootstrapping as a source of seed funding. Because seed funding is a problem for small businesses, as we would have discussed earlier. Aldrin just graduated with a degree in journalism, comes from a poor background. Parents cannot help fund his business, never been employed, doesn't have money, can't go to the bank. They don't know him, they don't know his business. So where does he get money to fund business? And then this is where this study came about, after reading the alternative sources.
Yeah.
And in the literature, there's very little written about this. And then this, the findings, amongst other things, does also find that this is precisely the problem that most businesses don't use it.
Yeah.
So the literature that we have in the main about the sourcing of funding and the funding for businesses is mainly traditional sources of funding, which is very difficult for small and starting enterprises.
So just quickly then explain to us what bootstrapping is before we go through the various other categories that are under bootstrapping.
Okay. So there are a lot of scholars who would have talked about what bootstrapping is. And then I'll just read you one, and then I'll summarize it to you in our day-to-day writing. So one of the scholars is Tomori. He described bootstrapping as a highly creative way of acquiring the use of resources without borrowing money or raising equity financing from traditional sources. So that is how Tomori described bootstrapping as. But the definition that we used for this study was the use of highly creative ways of meeting the need for resources without relying on long-term external finance from debt and or new owners. So this is what the scholars have described bootstrapping to be. So in our day-to-day speak, how we'll describe bootstrapping as is simply put, ways of funding finance without the business owner going to the bank or to the lenders to borrow money or asking other persons to buy a stake in their businesses. That is how we will describe it.
Yeah.
But the most important word before you come in, Aldrin, the most important word there is highly creative ways of acquiring resources. Because the most important thing is why do you need money in the first place?
Okay. Are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Sure. So I wanted to find out from you then, what would be the key distinction between bootstrapping as well as in comparison, for instance, to going to a financier, like a bank?
Right. The key distinction would lie in the main. In the advantages of bootstrapping. That question will address the advantages of bootstrapping. Now, let us first move from the generally known, which is going to the bank. When somebody goes to the bank or a lender will not just give you money. The lender will first want a business plan from you. And then they will want to interrogate the business plan. They will want to know your operational plan, your management account, your business strategy, and all those things. So that is what a traditional source of a financier will do. And in so doing, the entrepreneur will be disclosing their trade secrets, amongst other things, which they don't want to do, because we all know that ideas get stolen. So that is what they will do when they go to a financier. But when they use bootstrapping, they do not go to a financier, so they do not go to the bank. Number one, there is no requirement for a business plan. Remember also, if you need a business plan, you must first invest some money that you do not have, because this must be done by professionals. And these guys we're looking at in the main are starting up, so they do not have that money. They do have a plan in their head. They might have written it down in a piece of paper, but it is not written in a form and a standard that would be acceptable by an external financier. Number two, the trade secrets are protected by the entrepreneur because they are not shared with anyone. So the difference between the main difference between the two is that the bootstrapper will keep the trade secret. He will also save the cost of raising finance. There is a cost that is attached to raising finance. Before the cost of the finance, when you are borrowing money from a bank, there are two types of costs that you will incur. It is the finance cost once you have acquired it. It is also the cost of raising the finance itself. Often than not, people who are starting up business, they do not have this finance. So that would be the main difference between a bootstrapping means. Hence, we are saying that we are looking at creative ways of trying to get that finance or those resources that you need for business, one of which is to avoid the cost that external funding comes with, which is the cost of raising the finance and the cost of maintaining the finance.
And I see from your research as well and crunching the numbers in terms of the data, if you look, for instance, at businesses that are less than a year old, in terms of bank loans, this is now money that is received from the bank or financiers, we are standing at 1.6%. This is now according to your respondents. And interesting for me, though, is that what then comes between the year when you have been in business between 1 year and 5 years, that it would almost seem that the banks are more willing to provide funding for a business that has been in operation for over a year, up to 5 years. Because then the bank loan numbers increase to 7.8% compared to the 1.1% of companies or businesses that are younger than a year.
Yes, there would be a gradual increase, Aldrin, but even if when you look at the increase, 7% is too little. It's too little. But the difference would be, like I'm saying, that that's the difference between a bootstrapper and external funding, because one of the ways, as you were saying, if you look at the literature, one of the ways you will raise funding by bootstrapping is that Bonginkosi knows David. So I tell David I want to start a business. Would you be kind to lend me 10,000? He knows me. He doesn't know my business. So he's more likely to give me 10,000. Now, the business is between 0 and 365 days old. Now, you go to the bank. You tell them, I've got a brilliant idea. Lend me some money, 10,000. The bank will want a business plan, wants to see if the business can work, wants to see if the business is sustainable. Would you be able to pay back? So that is why you find in the research findings that businesses which are between zero and a year, they are almost never going to fund a loan from the bank. But after year one, the business would have traded. The business would have traded after year one. They would have financial statements. They would have operational plans. They would have customers. They would have cash in the same bank. And then gradually, the banks will lend the business. But also, you must check the extent of the funding. Although it's 7% increase in numbers, but what we did not look at is the extent of the loans themselves. In what region are they? So gradually, as the business progresses in terms of years, banks and external funders would be more likely to lend them, but not at the rate at which they would be requiring funding. So they would still be reliant on bootstrap methods than external funders.
Okay, so after Power News headlines, we'll be taking your calls on 0861-987-000. I'd like to know from you, as a business owner or as an entrepreneur, probably somebody who has tried business, How difficult was it for you to try and raise funding? Which method did you use to try and raise the funding? Or probably you know of somebody who is in business and how they've tried to raise funding as well. You can call us on 0861-987-000. You can also tweet at Aldrin Simpier, hashtag PowerTalk, and also tweet at PowerFM97. We're in conversation with Bonnkosi Zwane, who is a lecturer as well as a scholar. We're focusing on his dissertation that looked into bootstrapping as a form of financing. So through his research, he's also come up with at least, let me see, it is 6 subcategories. This is now under bootstrapping, which we'll get into just after Power News headlines. Number 1 is customer-related methods. Number 2, owner-related financing and resources. Number 3, joint utilization of resources with other ventures and delaying payments. And then we also have minimization of capital invested in stock. And then the last one is subsidy finance. And of course, the subsidy finance is more around the agents that have agencies that have been put in place by government to try and finance small business as well as just finance business in the country. Bonnkosi, before we go to Power News headlines, just quickly, were you able to discern from your respondents what the response have been from the banks when they try to apply and the reasons that have been given by the banks why the application have been rejected?
Yes, we have. And what we found from the respondents and what we find in literature completely agrees.
Mm.
Most cases than not, banks are not willing to fund small businesses because they are not sure of the sustainability of their businesses beyond their formation.
Does this then mean that there's an expectation, at least from government's agency through its subsidies, to be more, to take more risks as the banks are more risk averse?
Precisely. This is what we'll recommend in this study and the following one, that the only persons which can come to the aid of startups is government subsidies, because banks are there to do business. Banks are in the business of making money, not starting businesses.
Yeah.
That's what people should appreciate. And if a bank has got only 10,000 to lend and there are two competing businesses who want money, the bank will give to the business that they think they will be able to get their return on investment. And often than not, that won't be a small business, that won't be a startup.
Mm. Okay, so we'll delve into the subcategories of the bootstrapping more just after Power News headlines. It's 11:30. It's time for Power News headlines. We'll be taking your calls as well on 0861-987-000, your tweets at Aldrin Simpier, and you can also tweet hashtag Power Talk.
Speak up. Call the Power Line on 0861-987-000.
And you can also tweet at Aldrin Simpier, hashtag Power Talk, and also tweet at PowerFM97. We're in conversation with the Bonnkosi Zwane. We're looking at his dissertation around financing for small businesses, but specifically micro businesses and the bootstrapping financial model. So we'd love to hear from you, your take on it, your experience, if at all you have tried bootstrapping. And as we continue this conversation towards the top of the hour, we will be going through some of the subcategories of the bootstrapping, and we'll get Bonnkosi to explain some of those as well. But in the meantime, your calls quickly before we go back to Bonnkosi. Tebogo, good morning.
Hi, Aldrin, how are you?
Good, good, Bob.
I'm good. Yeah, I don't know where my experience falls within, because in my experience, I had been working for a company for some time, and then I developed relationships with suppliers. And then when I left the company, the supplier started supplying me, and I didn't have any capital at all. What happened was that because of the relationship, the personal relationship that we developed, they were able to trust me enough to supply me with stock, and then I pay them later when I get paid. So initially it was like short term. They were expecting me to say, for example, if they supply me stock today, I go and sell to my customers who are supposed to pay me COD, and then I pay them back maybe the next day or same day. But with time, because when I started having bigger customers, they started demanding that I must give them credit.
Okay.
So because of the relationship, the suppliers ended up giving me that credit, even though I wouldn't qualify for credit if I was to be taken to through the credit bureau checking system and all that. Yeah.
And then in terms of COD, because that's one of the points that that Bongi Nkosi also mentions as the subcategories, and this is the payment from customers, so customer-related methods. For you, was it easy to tell your customers that, hey, listen, cash on delivery?
It wasn't easy, but I had to tell them, and I had to not take certain orders where I wasn't going to get COD. Mm. I had to turn down the orders because if there was no COD, it means I couldn't tell my supplier that I'll pay you after a month or so.
Mm.
So that also hinders the growth of the business.
Okay, Debo, if you don't mind, which business are you in?
In the printer cartridges, supplying printer cartridges to everybody. Yeah.
Okay. No, thanks a lot for that call. Tebe, good morning.
Thanks, Alden. How are you been?
Good.
Thanks. Just a quick one. As a person who's been working with the SMEs for a long time, actually, this is a very interesting, good topic. I must say, thank you. Kudos to you.
You're welcome.
Just a quick question to Bongosi. On his research, because I've noticed that it's a copy and paste model, which mostly, especially our developmental finance institute, and also, of course, the traditional banks, they use to do some kind of financing to the SMEs. And most disappointingly, the developmental finance institute, mostly your public sector, it's a copy and paste, which is the same thing in terms of assessing.
Mm.
Whether did he assess the credit model which is currently being used? Because I've noticed that the new emergence of the new finance houses, the private sector ones, officially, what they do, they're quick in terms of turnaround time. They are actually looking after the actual risk. What they in terms of financing the SMEs, they will finance the SME within 48 hours. They are looking for the basics, for example, the bank statement and whatever the order the SME is having, and they finance the SME. But when you go to your traditional housing finance houses, you'll find that they'll take forever, which kills the SME. And then, and of course, they'll ask all the as Bongis was saying, all the ingredients and so on, which really doesn't answer the key issue of the SME, which is just the finance of
the particular
savings which they are looking for.
Yeah.
So which then questions the model which has been used, whether it doesn't really talks to the SME.
Yeah. Okay. Bongose?
Yeah. I just want to go to Tebe first. He raises a critical point. And this is what we have found in our study. Although we did not study at length the question that he asked, that the models that the agencies, especially and disappointingly, the agencies of government, is that they use a cut-and-paste model, like he says. This is what they want to see, and then this is how they're going to assess the small businesses. And it makes an interesting point about bank statements. A new startup does not have a bank statement. They have not been in business.
That's true.
So if you look at the study, you'll see that there's 1 to 5, there's 0 to 1, and then maybe 2 to 5. So there are those at formative stage and then those that are wanting to grow. So the focus of the study in the main was 0 to 1. They don't have a bank statement. They don't have a business plan. They don't have this, they don't have that, they don't have the other. And then these guys who are sitting in these agencies, they are looking for all these things. And on the basis of that, you will either get or not get financing. And hence, most startups will not get funding from these agencies. This is why you see in our recommendation that government agencies should have a different model of funding a startup vis-a-vis those that have already started business or trading. And also we are saying that the people who are doing, who are employed by these agencies, they need to be trained on alternative methods. And they need to be trained on metrics, alternative metrics, to assess the success or not of a startup. But at the present moment, they just have a template that they are using that is taken from somewhere, from a different context, and then it's applied to all businesses. And hence, in the end, they end up killing them. But Teboho is what we call a bootstrapper of note. What your first caller, Teboho, yeah, was explaining, I knew you said after the break we'll discuss the different methods.
Mm.
He has described three of them.
Mm.
And then this is exactly why this research was important, because we want to encourage those guys who are going to be starting business that if you cannot find funding from traditional sources, your banks and your agencies, use other means which are creative. And then Teboho has put this into a practice that these are the creative means that he has used to sustain his business. And this is what this study advocates for.
Yeah. So with that said, then let's go through those. The six that you have picked up, customer-related methods, number one.
Yeah. Customer-related methods, you are going to be using your customers to fund your business. So ordinarily, the entrepreneur must fund his own business. But in this case, the entrepreneur does not have money to fund his own business because he's starting up. So he's going to use the customer's money to fund his business. Now, let us look at the example of Teboho. He said he supplies printer cartridges.
Yeah.
So how does he use the customers to fund his business? So he calls a customer A. Customer A wants 10 cartridges. Because he doesn't have money, now we ask the customer to pay a deposit. In other words, the customer is paying for the cartridges before the customer actually receives the cartridges. So in other words, the customer is financing his own acquisition. So that is what we talk about when we're talking about a customer-related method, that you must ask people to pay in advance. It's difficult, but in some instances, it's doable, depending on the nature of the business. Teboho has indicated that you can actually get a deposit from your customers.
Mm.
And the study found that more than 50% of the customers did want to pay
a deposit.
Upfront.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is one method.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, if your customer cannot give you a deposit, but you still want their business, you supply them. And you tell them that if you take quicker to pay back my money, I'm going to give you a discount. That is what in accounting they call settlement discounts. Settlement discounts, even big businesses use them. They are actually customer funding. You are saying, do not take 60 days to pay me, but take 20 days. If you pay me within 20 days, I'm going to give you a discount. And then the customer takes shorter period to pay back. That will improve the liquidity of the business. But not all your customers will be able to pay you as quickly as possible, especially now. We've got a problem now of the COVID-19. People cannot be paying. So what do? You charge them interest. If you are taking longer than 30 days to pay, I'm going to charge you interest. So interest does two things, really. One, it encourages people to pay faster. Therefore, your business is more liquid. If not, it means the money that you would have otherwise invested in your business is sitting with the customer. Then the customer should pay return on capital. Then you charge them interest. So that is what a customer-related method means. But again, Aldrin, the important thing was, this is what I was going to discuss before we get to each separate one.
Yeah.
Is what is important and always important, especially for small businesses. I hope I get my English right because I'm not.
No, as I mean.
Is that we must not put the cart before the horse. So you don't look for the money first. You first look at why do I need the money? And then once you have identified the need for resources, then you look at the creative ways of finding. Because in most cases than not, people will look for money. And then once they've got money, which has got cost implications on it,
yeah,
only then they start to spend the money, which creates inefficiencies and the businesses are not effective. So when you use your customers, you may realize then that you don't need a lot of money. All you need is to get your stock. How do you get your stock? You get the customer to order the stock first, and the customer must pay for the stock itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then you take the same money, go and buy the stock, and you deliver the stock to your customer.
Okay. And then, unfortunately, we're running out of time, and we have at least, what, 5 to go through. We've already done the other one that is an idea around the subsidy funding. But here's the one around owner-related funding and resources.
This is the one that I'll try to go quickly. This is the one that owners use in the main.
Mm-hmm.
This is the one that they use in the main. And again, I think Teboho uses this one. Owner-related is that the owner uses own funds, nothing else. So the business cannot get a loan from the bank. So what does the owner do? The owner puts his own money in the business. If he doesn't have money, he'll go and borrow money from the bank. The bank might not lend the business, but it can lend the person itself. So instead of the company getting a loan, the owner in his own name or her own name will get the loan from the bank. Also, the owner works for the business.
Yeah.
So the owner must get one of two things from the business, either a salary or dividends or the share of profit. So in this instance, the owner, instead of drawing a salary or profit from the business, he will reinvest the money in the business. You sell 10 cartridges to make a profit of 1,000 rand. Instead of taking the 1,000 rand to your personal account, you use the same 1,000 rand to fund your next order. The owner will work from home. Instead of going to look for an office or a factory, you work from home. You convert your garage into your business premise. Literature tells us that how Bill Gates started Microsoft.
Yeah.
Instead of employing people, you employ your family. You employ your wife, you use your children, and then you use your relatives. That's what the business in the Middle East do. And I think that's what the Somalis are doing also in the townships.
Yeah, yeah. On that particular point, because this dissertation was done like back in 2011. 2011, yeah. So 2011, you do this dissertation. We don't have a minimum wage legislation in place. So now that we have a minimum wage legislation in place, if you try to employ a family member, how do you guys then navigate around that when you know that I can't afford to pay you 3,500, but what I can do is pay you 2,000 or 2,500?
Sometimes you cannot pay them anything, eh?
Yeah.
Which is what they started fine. That is why they say, Adrian, that you must employ a family. Because now I can't go to the guy from across the road and say, come and work. This month, there will be no salary. So hence the study say, employ your own family, employ your own friends. You tell them straight, we get paid as we make money. In the first month, we don't make money because no one has paid us, so you're not going to get paid. And also you see that when you are using this form of financing, you're paying people below market rates. You tell them straight.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, minimum wage is not a market wage. The market wage may be 5,000, and the minimum wage may be 3,500. But you tell the guy, you are sitting at home doing nothing because there are no jobs in South Africa and we are losing them. You are skilled, you are working in the mine, you are making manufacturing, you are working here and there. Come and work for me. I know that your pay is 10,000, and I know the minimum wage is 3,500, but I will pay you 2,000 rand, at least in the first year whilst the business is starting up. Because if I pay you 10,000, we're going to kill the business before it even starts. So that is what the study finds. But hence we say creative ways, because now you need to sit down with Mnigat and you need to convince him. I know you are worth 10,000, but I'll give you 2,000. 2,000 rand is better than nothing. Let's grow this business so that next year or 2 years' time, we earn 10,000, 20,000.
Okay. Joint utilization of resources with other ventures. And I know that our pork lady, who is also in agriculture, for instance, would always speak about using contract tractors amongst each other, amongst the small farmers. Yeah.
The current study, although this one was done in 2011, the current study that I'm doing now for the PhD, and it also puts tractors in agricultural cooperatives, as you have said. This is the most important. This is the one that small businesses should do. And how did Somalis get South Africans out of business in the township? Joint utilization of resources. Not all tuck shops in Imbali need a delivery van. You only need one. If the guy down the road has a van, you don't need to go and buy a van. You're going to kill your business. You must use the same van. He must be the one who go to Makro or who go to the cash and carry and buy the stock and then deliver to you. So that is what the joint utilization means, that the resources that are already there amongst the small businesses, they must be shared. Because if everyone owns a van, there is a great deal of inefficiencies. Because you all have a van or a small delivery package that would be used only for 1 hour a day. But you are paying 7,000 rands a month, including insurance and all these things. So joint utilization means if one farmer has a tractor, the other nine farmers don't need to buy tractors, but they must use this tractor. So it means they help the one who owns the tractor to finance the tractor, but at the same time, they're getting the great utility out of that tractor and all other equipment.
Yeah.
It also goes to offices. Big businesses are starting to do that. Not everyone needs to have their own premises to work on. Big businesses are doing that. They work under one building. They've got one secretary for five different businesses. Doctors will do that. There'll be a dentist, an optometrist, a gynecologist here and there, but there'll be one secretary. That is joint utilization of resources.
Yeah.
And they're saving time. They're paying one admin instead of paying 10.
Yeah. Okay, let's just quickly go to these two calls before we go to the other two points that are left, which is delaying payments as well as minimization of capital invested stock. Sibusiso, good morning.
Morning, sir. How are you?
Good, man.
I'm good. This is Sibusiso from Sasolburg, eh?
Mm.
Yes, I'm calling you. I was having a business previously in 2018 in Mpumalanga then Malelane.
Yeah.
Yeah, for a farming, chicken farming.
Mm.
So I did start this business with a partner, which I was having from the start. So my business did fall down, and the time when it falls down, and then I'm trying to get some funding, I go to the government of the agriculture. So they told me that I must have a land which is calling that I'm doing business.
Mm.
So the land which I was doing business at previously, it was just a stand business.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they told me that I must have a papers and a land which is calling a business. That's the time they're going to fund me so that I can get started. Yeah.
Okay, quickly tell us what advice you need.
So I want to get advice that what must I do to get a land and to start all of it and to get the funding also included.
Okay, just hold on there, Sibusiso, before you let go. Let's go to Stephen quickly. Good morning, Stephen.
Alvin, yes, I want actually to say, to share what I actually experienced when I actually started my business after being disappointed by the government institution on borrowing money. And then I sit down and say that, no, but now I think the best way to approach this whole elephant is to start with what you have, not what you don't have.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, I start actually reinvesting everything that I had and then moving from the building premises where I was renting, moving home and started actually now working from home. Although it was difficult, I didn't earn any salary. But at the end, the idea of saying that I don't want to have status as a businessman, I want to serve my clients that are out there. So it just completely shifted my mind from looking at money and saving.
Yeah.
So I'm more saving than actually I need money, but I'm saying that I don't want to choke myself with many things at one stage.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Tobani. Good morning.
Morning, how are you?
Good, good, man.
So to Umkungelo Udlula Bedlala, so what I would like to ask him is, would he advocate for businesses to go for payment holiday or even individual? That's my only question.
Okay, then. Thank you so much for that. Bonkosi, quickly, you need to answer those two questions before we finalize with the two other points.
Yeah. Spusi, so unfortunately, I cannot offer some advice to Spusi. This was said earlier, I think, by Tebe. It's cut and paste model. They will say to you, you must have land and the land must be registered into business. Whereas bootstrapping advocates for the opposite. You don't need to have land. I've got a friend, currently he's a farmer. He doesn't own the land. The land belonged to somebody else.
Yeah.
But because the land was lying fallow, he was able to get use of that land and is farming now. So traditional lenders won't give him the funding because they want what we call security. And the land must be security, but the land does not belong to him.
Yeah.
That is why we are saying that those who are in government agencies, they need to be educated like in Malaysia and Singapore. Mm-hmm. On the alternative methods. Hopefully, this is what future studies will show to Stephen is a perfect entrepreneur.
Yep.
Payment holidays should not be accepted. They're going to kill businesses.
Mm.
What government should do is to provide proper relief. Imagine, Adrian, when you take a payment holiday, after 6 months, the same one million with a borrowed would be 1.3 million.
Okay. Do you know what? On that particular point, can we have a discussion around the payment holidays, a more in-depth discussion around that as well as the impact of it? But just quickly wrap up the two points. This is now the delaying of payments as a subcategory of bootstrapping as well as minimization of capital invested stock. Unfortunately, we only have 2 minutes left.
Yeah. Delay payments means that you negotiate well with your suppliers. That you will pay them late, and then they should not charge you interest, so that your business becomes liquid. If you can, and then the earlier caller did say that it's a problem, and it is a problem. And then the other one was minimization capital in stock invested. Businesses should not hold stock. It is inefficient. If you are selling cartridges, don't buy cartridges and keep them in your warehouse because it means you take money, you pay for it. If you buy it on credit, you'll be charged interest. You don't keep stock. You wait for orders and you only order to supply or you only produce to supply. This is one other way that you'll be able to keep your business afloat. Like we are saying in conclusion, Aldrin, you must be creative. The creativity will result in efficiencies and effectiveness. If you are not creative, you'll have new equipment, expensive and big loans, and then you'll kill your business. So bootstrapping says your business should be light, should not carry any dead weight.
Okay. A lot of requests here, people wanting access to your dissertation. How can they get a hold of it?
My dissertation is online on Google Scholar, and there are two peer-reviewed articles that are also available on research. All they need to check is for Bonginkosi's one on Google Scholar. They will find it and or on ResearchGate.
Okay, thank you.
It has been cited quite a lot in research papers.
Yeah.
I was shocked to see the extent to which it was cited internationally and globally.
Actually, we got a tweet here from Entle who says, how great it is to listen to Bonkosi. We were reading his dissertation in my group called Women in Engineering purely for fundraising methods for up and coming graduates not to go to the corporate world. So well done, Bonkosi, in what you've done. And thank you so much for sharing the details around how to get a hold of the dissertation.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.